Well, it is December 2nd, 2022. Ward Green here, 1513 hours. Interesting number. I just woke up and had my breakfast, and I had 4 drops of minitetronone, MK4, which is vitamin K2, in the thorn formulation. And I took those 4 drops with Cheerios, which I'm having for the first time for breakfast in a long time, the first time in a very long time that I've had that for breakfast. I used the goat's milk, and I used for sweetener xylitol instead of sugar. And it doesn't taste, you know, it doesn't taste the same exactly as sugar, but it's close enough. But it's far healthier, of course, for the dental health of the mouth. The xylitol is a sugar alcohol, and it kills the bacteria that cause tooth decay. So it's but after I have my meal, I always chew xylitol gum as well, which I'm chewing. Because of its cavity prevention quality, and also it tastes really good. So you can get xylitol gum in fresh fruit flavor, which is similar to what we used to get, and it was called Wrigley's Juicy Fruit when they made that gum, and they might still make it, but it was a sugar-based gum, of course, which I won't want nowadays because I'm giving up sugar. But there are other ways to get sweetener, such as with xylitol. But I don't use sweetener if I can avoid it. I use natural sweeteners such as fruit. And xylitol is natural only in a sense that it is derived from natural sources, plant sources. But it's not so much. It's considered artificial because it's an extract. But it's not synthetic. It's not synthesized, which some forms of vitamin K2 are. In fact, some forms of vitamin K2 are synthesized inside the body and also outside the body, but they're not naturally occurring in plants. And in other words, they can make them in the lab as well as in the body can form these compounds internally. But I'm just beginning to learn about it, so I don't want to say any more than that. That's about all that I'm going to say about that right now, and we'll see what more I learn, and whether I have to qualify that or not, I'll learn. But in the future, but for now, vitamin K2 is produced in the body from vitamin K1. The body can manufacture it in the form of MK4, which is the menaquinone form of vitamin K, which is K2. It's called K2. And MK7 is also a form of menaquinone. The MK indicates that it's in the menaquinone family, but also MK7 is a longer chain molecule than MK4. MK13 I've heard of, which is a very long chain compared to MK4. And there are 9 known forms of vitamin K2. But vitamin K1 is the vitamin, is the K vitamin that's found in kale and dark leafy greens, so salad foods. I'm not sure if there's any K1 in matcha tea or not. Maybe there is, but I haven't looked into that. But K1 is a different form of vitamin K because it's not as effective as vitamin K2. It doesn't have as long a half-life or an effect in the body. It only lasts a matter of some hours, whereas vitamin K2 is believed and confirmed as having an effect for more than just one day, you know, up, in fact, 72 hours of activity. So that's 3 days. So in case you haven't done that math yet, if you're new to that, perhaps young people are just learning about how many hours in the day and so on, but 72 hours is 3 days. So vitamin K2 is a very potent and powerful vitamin compared to K1, but it has many effects and benefits that vitamin K1 does not have. And I'm just right now these days I'm investigating the effect of K2 in the MK4 form, which I'm getting in a liquid supplement. But I need to take some vitamin D, because I'm not taking vitamin D unless I take some vitamin D, which I do take whenever I take the MK7 supplement. I'm going to take 4,000 units. Oh, I need my water. 4,000 units of vitamin D right now, because I'm not getting enough, probably. I'm having some interesting effects of the vitamin K2 in the menetetronone form, which is MK4. I'm not sure if it's making my joints feel very good. Like my arthritis is feeling non-existent, which is a good thing. I mean, it's a very good, it's more than very good even. It's a miraculous thing. But, you know, I have to know what the dosage is that I need to take. Maybe there's a way to optimize that, and I haven't learned that. But it seems to me it might be affecting. You know, I mean, my knees might be fine, but my coordination might not be as good right now. I'm not sure. My balance and things like that. I'm not sure if I'm as strong in every respect with the K2 in the MK4 form. That's what has to be investigated. You know, I mean, everything has to be investigated. But also the dosage has to be varied. I've just started with 4 drops. Every time I take it, I take 4 drops, which is about three times the recommended daily, but three times the recommended daily of any of a vitamin, in this case of this vitamin, I mean, of vitamin K2, is a meaningless amount, because there's no recommended daily with a vitamin that has no known toxicity. So there's no reason to limit your intake. But, and also, for that matter, Dr. Kate Rayon Blue, the world's expert on vitamin K2, the preeminent expert, she was taking 3 times the recommended daily of vitamin K2 when she was pregnant. So just think about that. That's how confident she was in the effectiveness and safety of vitamin K2. But she may have been taking the MK7. I believe she might have been doing that rather than the menetetronone, which is a big difference. I mean, they're different forms of vitamin K2. Like I said, I think, like right now, I feel almost a little bit dizzy. And I don't believe that the food that I'm eating alone would cause that. So I'm going to try reducing the dosage of the menetetronone, actually, because I think that might be the cause of my feeling a little bit off balance. Anyway, it's been used in Japan in a much higher dosage than what I'm taking, and it was used to reverse osteoporosis effectively. They reversed osteoporosis in Japan using the same supplement, MK4, which is astonishing. But the dosage was 45 milligrams per day, which would be... What am I taking? Perhaps I was... What was I taking? I don't know if I was taking 1,200 per day micrograms. Would that be a milligram? Yeah. So I was thinking, maybe I'm taking a milligram a day instead of 45 milligrams a day. I'm taking 1/45 of what they were using to treat osteoporosis. To reverse osteoporosis or to prevent bone loss entirely. But in fact, to cause increase in bone mass in some cases. So they had great success with this MK4, this liquid vitamin K2. I'm so new to all of the terminology that I'm not trying to give a sales pitch, but I'm not able to speak entirely fluently on the subject. But rest assured, if you Google it, you'll find out that this is commonly accepted and general knowledge that in Japan they've been reversing osteoporosis for decades using this supplement, vitamin K2, called it. The MK4 form of it, called minitetranone. So, yeah, I think it's making me a little dizzy. I think, but then again, I don't normally eat the xylitol either. As a sweetener, that could be making me dizzy also. I'm not sure if that would make me dizzy or why it would, but... And I don't usually eat the Cheerios. They could be making me dizzy. It could be the Cheerios. I don't know what's doing it, but everything takes time. When it comes to nutrition, it always takes time to assess everything. It takes time to understand what's happening in the body before you make a change in your regimen. But I mean, you have to be also very quick to make changes when there's anything that is undesirable in your symptoms. You know, you have to be quick to go back to what was working before or stop doing what you're doing now long enough to reassess what you need to do with regard to changing something. So right now, today, I'd like to show you this very interesting video. Fascinating video, but it's got to do with superconductors, so if you've never seen anything about superconductors, this may be new to you, possibly. Let me see if I can get some light shone on the subject here. Just enough light. Okay. Let's see what we can do here. Yeah, so let me just get this adjusted a little bit better. That might be better. Okay, this is the video that I was watching myself. I'm going to have to change the size of this so we can see it. I have to resize. Yeah, like this. I don't know what to do with this particular window. Hang on a second. There we go. That might do it. Does it? Yes. Okay. I'm getting there. One moment, please. There we are. Okay. What's the video?
Okay, everyone. Today I'm going to be showing you the quantum locking experiment. Now, this is one of the coolest experiments, in my opinion, that I've ever done on my channel. So first I'm going to show the quantum locking in action, and it's really amazing. And then afterwards, I'm going to be taking some time to explain how it works. And it's going to be a little bit long, but I think I've made it understandable to a general audience. Even if you don't have a quantum mechanical background or even a physics background, you'll probably be able to understand how this is working. Now, this is a type 2 superconductor. And what that means is that it can actually undergo quantum locking. But in order for it to become a superconductor, we have to cool it down. So let's first cool it down, and then I'll show you some really neat quantum locking experiments. So So in order to cool this down, we need some liquid nitrogen. Now I'm just going to drop my superconducting puck in here. So I'm going to try a few things here. First, I'll try putting a small magnet on the superconductor and show you what happens. And then I'll be putting the superconductor on some bigger magnets. And then I'll be putting it on a track where you can push it around. And it's really amazing what happens. Okay, watch me place the magnet on the superconductor. Watch this. It always comes back to the same spot. Get it even closer. Notice how it's not touching, but I can push the superconductor by touching the magnet. It's like it's gripped onto it. Okay, now let's try it with a few more magnets by putting the superconductor on top of them. Look how it just stays right where I put it. So cool. So now I'm going to place it on this track that just has rows of neodymium magnets so that these are opposite poles. So what it does is it creates a symmetric magnetic field in this direction, but not in this direction. Now watch what we can do. Okay, now watch this. Now, as if that's not impressive enough, let's flip the track over and watch this. So the superconductor is so strong, it can actually carry other things on it. Let's try to carry an orange. Levitating bread. So in order to understand how quantum locking works, let's first understand how superconductivity works. So if I were to graph here on the y-axis, resistance, So this is just electrical resistance versus temperature. At high temperatures, the resistance would be high, but then suddenly it would drop down to zero. Now for the superconductor that I was using, this is around 0.01 ohms. And the interesting thing is, this is exactly 0 ohms. So once it drops down to this lower temperature, the resistance of the material is exactly zero. Not really small, but zero. There's no electrical resistance. Now, to make sure you know how crazy that sounds, imagine I were to tell you that I begin stirring this liquid here, and then I stop stirring it, and you can see that eventually it just stops swirling around altogether. But what if I were to tell you that there's a material that if I start swirling it, it never stops, ever. There's absolutely no internal friction. Well, that would sound preposterous, but that's exactly what's happening in superconductors. But instead of water flowing around in a circle, electrons are flowing around in circles. And it never stops. In fact, there's no internal resistance. So with semiconductors, you literally have perpetual motion of electrons once you start them moving. As long as it stays below this transition temperature, those electrons will flow indefinitely. But how is this possible? How could there be no internal resistance? How could the electrons moving around in a material not cause the material to heat up very slightly? Well, it has to do with quantum mechanics. Now, normally an electron in a conductor can be thought of as a free particle moving. So what that means is that the electron can move through the material and it can bump atoms in the material and bounce into them and get scattered. Now, when an electron hits an atom in the lattice of some conductor, what that causes it to do is lose some energy. So when the electron hits this atom here, it causes it to wiggle a little bit, and that turns into heat, and so the electron loses some energy. And so by moving electrons through any conductor, you eventually lose the energy to heat. So the current...
Yeah, vibration of atoms is what heat is. So he's saying that when the electron hits the atom, it loses energy by causing heat. In other words, vibration of the atoms. So it's not a perfect conserved process. The energy is lost. Some of it is lost with every collision.
Will stop as long as...
That's what happens in normal conductors.
Don't keep pushing the electrons. So in a normal non-superconductor material, you throw electrons or try to move electrons through it, they're going to bounce around for a while, but eventually they'll stop.
But then he goes on and talks about what makes superconductors different. And if you want, you can go and watch that video at the Action Lab on YouTube is the channel. Quantum Locking Will Blow Your Mind. How Does It Work? Is the name of the article. But it's anyway, it's perhaps you found that interesting. I found it very interesting, but I've seen something very similar in the past with semiconductors. But you notice he was using magnets. The track he was using had very strong magnets on the track, so it wasn't just a semiconductor on any tabletop. It needed to have the particular structure of magnets underneath it, oriented in a precise way also, so that the superconductor would stay on the track. But the point was that in the presence of a magnet, a superconductor was suspended. It was suspended. And a magnet would be suspended above the superconductor. He also showed the magnet suspended above the superconductor in the first part of the video. And the interesting thing also was, and I'm not going to try to explain it because I haven't even studied it. It's got to do with this property of zero resistance, though, that makes semiconductors different from other materials. But any magnetic field that which would normally induce a current in a metal, or any in a conductor, any changing magnetic field, for example, or even a static magnetic field, induces a current. That's right. We have or a current currents also induce magnetic fields, so that you have an opposite magnetic field induced in the superconductor, and the opposite field is what repels it from the magnet, and so the two remain static and they don't approach each other. If you push the superconductor closer, it will provide more current to oppose the magnetic field that's to which it is then subjected by being closer. There will be a greater magnetic field. The closer you get to the strong magnets, the magnetic field is greater, and it induces a stronger current in the superconductor. But that current induces a magnetic field, and that magnetic field will be opposite, obviously, because they don't attract. It's the opposite magnetic field that is produced, so it's just enough. It's very curious, though, because he can move the magnet or the superconductor, and it will stay in position. Which is curious, because why? Well, if it were to try to fall, if gravity were to pull it any closer, that would cause an increase in the magnetic field, which would increase the current. But he's talking about quantum locking, and that's the explanation for how it stays put. Is this quantum locking? It's not immediately obvious how it does that. But you know, he talks about it in the video. We can spend a long time studying that sort of thing, but I don't think that's our intention today. But these things, some people who are involved with the study of physics will spend more time studying it. And anyone can study it if they're interested, of course. You can watch that video, or you can look at other materials about semiconductors. But it seems like we know that. I know from my own school days, my university days, one of our professors was involved with magnetic levitation, which uses the idea of trains moving on a track, which uses magnetic fields to lift the train off the track and eliminate friction. So the faster the train moves, I'm not sure what that entails. There's more than one way to do it. There are many ways you can do that. That's the other thing I was going to say too. The other day I was thinking about this, and today I was thinking about it also. When I'm designing something, there are so many ways to do it. There are so many ways. That's why design takes a long time, because there's not just one way to skin a cat or to make a design. In other words, there are many ways to make a design. And all these different ways are what become conflicted in a person who has many different understandings. The more talented you are, the more possibilities you're going to understand and see. So it makes it more difficult to choose what it is you're going to do. If you're giving a talk, the more talented you are, the more difficult it is to figure out what to say, because there are so many things you could say. It becomes more difficult the more intelligent you are to make choices. To make choices becomes more difficult. So there are so many possibilities. Magnetic levitation, it seems to me that the faster the train went, the higher it was levitated, perhaps. I'm not sure if that's correct. But you wouldn't want the train to be levitated too high either. And you could use magnets also on the inside of the track and the inside of the train wheels to keep the wheels from touching the track on the sides as well. It could be L-shaped wheels that aren't really wheels, they just slide, but they're magnetic. And the magnetic field can be produced by the motion, too. Static magnets moving, or static conductors, I should say. A conductor moving through a magnetic field . Okay, I might be getting a sore throat again. And this morning I ate the matcha tea. No, did I? No, I haven't eaten the matcha tea. I had the yogurt. That's right. So I might be getting it from the yogurt. I'm getting a sore throat. I had the yogurt. I had the Cheerios. I could be getting it from the goat's milk. But I don't think I had goat's milk when I first got the infection, I don't believe, the other day. I'm going to take some vitamin C right now because it's not good to wait. I have the slow release vitamin C. Units. It's very serious if you don't treat your infection. I mean, 1545. This is a new onset. A new onset of a sore throat. Now, I think I'll be able to easily, as is, at least that's the normal case, that's what usually happens. I'll be easily able to get rid of the sore throat and to cure the infection, to wipe it out completely using vitamin C, but it's something that has to be done immediately when you're aware of the first awareness of the symptom. On the first awareness, it's very important to take action. Or else, if you don't, you'll develop more symptoms and you'll get sick. And that's just that simple. And you'll have to take more vitamin C then. And your recovery will take somewhat longer. So, I'll look into these. I've never really even looked at, ever. I've never looked at magnetic levitation. Never studied it. Apart from what we did in class in the 1970s, which is a long time ago now. I mean, that's more than 40 years ago now. So I don't remember what we studied really, but I know it's got to do with the movement of the train. It has something to do with this magnetic levitation. Either that, because if it weren't the movement, then you'd have to produce or have permanent magnets, right? One or the other. They have to be very strong magnets. You wouldn't get strong enough magnets that could lift a train. That's the problem. The magnets just aren't strong enough to do it, but I mean, natural magnets aren't strong enough, but you can get more magnetic field using electromagnets by having the speed of the train generate more magnetic field, and that can increase the lift capability of the magnetic system and therefore levitate the train. Now, I think the trains, they need some way to move when they're not in that condition of levitation, right? How do they work? I'm too curious. I have to look it up. Okay. magnetic levitation train. Let's see whether Wikipedia, maglev. Yeah, it was called maglev back then, too. That's what it was called. Two sets of electromagnets. They're electromagnets. They're not static magnets. So they require electricity. One set to repel and push the train up off the track, and another set to move the elevated train ahead, taking advantage of the lack of friction. They rise approximately 10 centimeters off the track. There are high-speed intercity maglev systems over 400 kilometers per hour, and low-speed urban maglev systems, 80 kilometers per hour, 250 miles per hour, or 50 miles per hour, respectively. Or also up to 200 kilometers for the urban maglev, which is 120 miles per hour. Some technologies require retractable wheels. So that makes some sense. As I was saying, there's no way to generate the magnetic field without electricity. So you'd have to use very, very powerful batteries or something if you didn't have wheels at low speeds. But at high speeds, you can generate electricity using the motion by moving a magnet through a coil of wire. That produces electricity, so you can use the train's motion to generate the electricity. But you can imagine that it can be quite complex. The way these things are designed can be quite detailed, quite complex. And that's why we don't want to study it right now, because it's just too much information. But when we need to know, when the time is right, we can study it. When it's useful to know, we can look into it further. So let's move to our daily study for today, the Psalm number 62, which is again written by David. And by the way, we have an update today from the governing body on the JW.org website. You might want to check that out. To the director of Jeduthun, this psalm is a melody of David. So it's fairly short, too. Fairly short. It's not too long. Which it always makes it far easier for us if it's short, because it takes our considerable focus of power and energy to do a study of Scripture, seeing as it has very important information and very very, you know, powerful principles contained within it. So little children, let's pray to Jehovah for some guidance. Jehovah, please give us your guidance and help us to focus with the energy that you provide us. While we are studying today. And we know that you give us the strength that we need on every occasion. When we ask you, and when we are attempting to remain in your love and in the truth, and so we ask for your blessing that we could have a portion of Holy Spirit to help us to understand these things in a way that gives us a better knowledge of the truth. In Jesus' name, amen. Psalm 62, it's of David, as I said. Indeed, toward God is my soul waiting in silence. From him my salvation is. Indeed, he is my rock and my salvation, my secure height. I shall not be made to totter very much. How long will you carry on frantically against the man whom you would murder? All of you are like a leaning wall. A stone wall that is being pushed in. Indeed, they give advice so as to allure from one's own dignity. They take pleasure in a lie. With their mouth they bless, but inside themselves they call down evil. Selah. Indeed, toward God, wait silently, O my soul, because from him is my hope. Indeed, he is my rock and my salvation, my secure height. I shall not be made to totter. Upon God are my salvation and my glory. My strong rock, my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Before him pour out your heart. God is a refuge for us. Selah. Indeed, the sons of earthling man are an exhalation. The sons of mankind are a lie. When laid upon the scales, they are altogether lighter than an exhalation. Do not put your trust in defrauding, nor become vain in sheer robbery. In case the means of maintenance should thrive, do not set your heart on them. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard even this, that strength belongs to Jehovah, to God. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard even this, that strength belongs to God. Also, loving kindness belongs to you, O Jehovah, for you yourself pay back to each one according to his work. That's a good principle. That's the end of Psalm 62. Jehovah pays back according to our work. He pays us back according to our work. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard even this, that strength belongs to Jehovah. And I can't read that. I keep reading it wrong. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard even this, that strength belongs to God. I have trouble reading that. I find that very difficult to read. Interestingly, for some reason. Once God has spoken, twice I've heard even this, that strength belongs to God. Now, I guess that's just one verse that I never memorized correctly for some reason. Also, loving kindness belongs to you, O Jehovah, for you yourself pay back to each one according to his work. And do not put your trust in defrauding, verse 10. Trust in him at all times, O people. Before him, pour out your heart. God is a refuge for us. My strong rock, my refuge is in God. God is our support. He's our rock. He's our secure height. So we get our security from Jehovah. That's why all of these schemes to try and get more security using security systems and passwords and vault locks and all, you know, I mean, combination locks, all kinds of security. It's futile in the end if we don't have Jehovah on our side. But on the other hand, if we do have Jehovah, I mean, that's, he's the source of security. It's from him that security comes. These other means of security are only very vague or faint, weak reflections or shadows of what Jehovah provides with regard to security. Salvation in verse 1 comes from God, Jehovah. Secure height, right? it mentions Rock and Salvation Secure Height in verse 2 and Rock and Salvation Secure Height in verse 6. How long will you carry on frantically against the man whom you would murder? David is asking that perhaps on his own behalf, because there are people trying to murder David. And these same ones about whom David is speaking give advice so as to allure from one's own dignity. They try to tempt us to compromise our dignity or to depart from our dignity, to give up our dignity. And these same ones take pleasure in lies as well. They bless with their mouth, but they call down evil within themselves on the inside, in their hearts. That's why, or that's after that, I should say, in consequence of that fact, or immediately following that statement, David says to his own soul to wait silently, because God is our hope. And we wait toward God. In other words, we wait with God in mind. He is our salvation. That's pretty encouraging. It's pretty strengthening. It's very strengthening, really, to see that's the way David handled his problems. And we know he had difficulties which were quite numerous, and he survived them all. He did very well. And that was his prayer. Isaiah 42. Now, this is a very interesting one, too. Look, my servant on whom I keep fast hold. My chosen one whom my soul has approved. That's a beautiful, beautiful scripture. Let's continue. Isaiah 42, verse 1. I have put my spirit in him. Justice to the nations is what he will bring forth. He will not cry out or raise his voice. And in the street he will not let his voice be heard. No crushed reed will he break. And as for a dim flaxen wick, he will not extinguish it. In trueness, he will bring forth justice. He will not grow dim or nor be crushed until he sets justice in the earth itself. And for his law, the islands themselves will keep waiting. Beautiful. Powerful. So wonderful to me to read that. Verse 5. This is what the true God Jehovah has said. The creator of the heavens and the grand one stretching them out. The one laying out the earth and its produce. The one giving breath to the people on it and spirit to those walking in it. I myself, Jehovah, have called you in righteousness. And I proceeded to take hold of your hand. And I shall safeguard you and give you as a covenant of the people, as a light of the nations, for you to open the blind eyes, to bring forth out of the dungeon the prisoner, out of the house of detention, those sitting in darkness. I am Jehovah, that is my name, and to no one else shall I give my own glory, neither my praise to graven images. The first things, here they have come. But new things I am telling out. Before they begin to spring up, I cause you people to hear them. Sing to Jehovah a new song, his praise from the extremity of the earth. You men that are going down to the sea, and to that which fills it, you islands and you inhabiting them, let the wilderness and its cities raise their voice. The settlements that Kedar inhabits, let the inhabitants of the crag cry out in joy. From the top of the mountains, let people cry aloud. Let them attribute to Jehovah glory. And in the islands, let them tell forth even his praise. Like a mighty man, Jehovah himself will go forth. Like a warrior, he will awaken zeal. He will shout, yes, he will let out a war cry. Over his enemies, he will show himself mightier. I have kept quiet for a long time. I continued silent. I kept exercising self-control. Like a woman giving birth, I am going to groan, pant, and gasp at the same time. I shall devastate mountains and hills and all their vegetation. I shall dry up, and I will turn rivers into islands, and reedy pools I shall dry up. And I will make the blind ones walk in a way that they have not known. In a roadway that they have not known, I shall cause them to tread. I shall turn a dark place before them into light, and rugged terrain into level land. These are the things that I will do for them, and I will not leave them. They must be turned back. They will be very much ashamed, those who are putting trust in the carved image. Those who are saying to a molten image, you are our gods. Hear, you deaf ones, and look forth to see, you blind ones. Who is blind if not my servant, and who is deaf as my messenger whom I send? Who is blind as the one rewarded, or blind as the servant of Jehovah? It was a case of seeing many things, but you did not keep watching. It was a case of opening the ears, but you did not keep listening. Jehovah himself, for the sake of his righteousness, has taken a delight in that he should magnify the law and make it majestic. But it is a people plundered and pillaged, all of them being trapped in the holes and in the houses of detention. They have been kept hidden. They have come to be for plunder without a deliverer, for pillage without anyone to say, bring back. Who among you people will give ear to this? Who will pay attention and listen for later times? Who has given Jacob for mere pillage and Israel to the plunderers? Is it not Jehovah, the one against whom we have sinned, and in whose ways they did not want to walk, and to whose law they did not listen? So he kept pouring out upon him rage, his anger, and the strength of war, and it kept consuming him all around. But he took no note, and it kept blazing up against him. But he would lay nothing to heart. Isaiah 42. So even Jehovah's people, even Israel, or Jacob, as he was called at first, even the nation of Israel do not get off without being accountable under Jehovah's righteous law, and even they must be subject to pillaging and plundering when they don't listen, when they don't look and listen and pay attention to Jehovah. In verse 21, Jehovah, that was in verse 24. And verse 25, Jehovah pours out upon Israel his anger, and yet he takes no note in verse 25. And in verse 21, Jehovah has taken a delight in magnifying the law. Yet his people are pillaged. Even the servant of Jehovah, mentioned in verse 19, are pillaged in verse 22. There's no way to help them because they act as though they're blind and deaf and they don't listen to Jehovah. In verse 18, Jehovah tells them, he commands them to listen or to hear and to look forth and see with their eyes, but they're blind and deaf. And one of the big ways in which he's, Jehovah that is reproving his people is that there are people among them who are doing idol worship and building idols, false gods, carving them out of metal and wood and building these false gods and worshiping these false idol gods. In verse 16, though, Jehovah gives hope because he says that the blind ones he will make walk in a way they have not known, by turning a dark place for them into light and a rugged terrain into level land, in other words, places where they can walk. Because they will see and they will have level land to walk on. He will not leave his people, he says also in that same verse at the end. I will not leave them. And Jehovah's mightier than his enemies in verse 13. He's Almighty God. That's right. Almighty God. The islands let them tell forth his praise in verse 12. So this idol worship that was mentioned earlier in Isaiah, we see that it's the reason why Jehovah is executing vengeance, or rather justice, upon his people. Not vengeance, but in this case, justice. He's executing justice according to his own laws that say you must not do these things with idol gods. You must not worship any other god except Jehovah, which was the first command. You must not have any other god before me, was the first commandment, was it not? Let's look at the Ten Commandments. Let's just look at the first commandment in Exodus chapter 20. You must not have any other gods against my face. Verse 3. In verse 4, you must not make for yourself a carved image. So it's the second commandment as well as the first commandment. You must not make a carved image which is like anything that is in the heavens above, or that is on the earth underneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. That was the point. You can make a carved image as long as it's not like any of these things on the earth. And then, verse 5, which is the third commandment, you must not bow down to them. Or is that the third commandment? No. That's still the second commandment. And then the third commandment is you must not take up the name of Jehovah in a worthless way. In other words, the name of the Lord in vain is another translation of that. And the fourth commandment is the Sabbath. To remember the Sabbath. And the fifth commandment was to honor your father and mother. The sixth commandment was not to murder. Seventh was not to commit adultery. The eighth was not to steal. The ninth was not to testify falsely against your neighbor or fellow man, rather. I should say, it has nothing to do with your neighbor. It's just not to tell lies or testify falsely, that is, against your fellow man. And also the tenth commandment, not to covet. So basically, murder, don't murder, commit adultery, steal, lie, or covet are the last five. Those are the Ten Commandments. Those were the Ten Commandments. They don't apply to us exactly that way today because we're in the New Covenant. We don't try to keep these separate laws of the old law of Moses today because we're not under that law. But that law is written on our hearts in the New Covenant. We understand it. Right? It's written on our hearts. Now look at it. I think I need to take another. I need to take another vitamin C. It's interesting because what I've eaten today, I didn't have any matcha tea. So I know whatever caused it. I know what's causing the sore throat, is, and I didn't have soup. I know it's not the soup, and I know it's not the matcha tea lattes, because I didn't have either today, and I'm still getting a sore throat again. So it's something I ate besides that, which is, it's either the yogurt, which it easily could be. Yogurt has bacteria in it. So the yogurt that I'm eating could be a kind of yogurt or a batch of yogurt that has bacteria in it that shouldn't be in there. That's possible. Very possible. And I'm eating fresh pineapple with that. The pineapple might be a source of bacteria also, I suppose. It's possible. But what else could be... What else did I eat? I ate some potato chips, but I don't think that I don't think that's likely the cause. Did I eat anything else? I had the bowl of Cheerios, right, with the goat's milk. So it could be the goat's milk. Yeah, it could be the goat's milk. It could be the goat's milk. Yep, could be that. In fact, I think it is the goat's milk more likely than anything, because that's what I had last. That's the last thing I ate, and that's when I started getting the sore throat. And it can happen quite quickly. When you eat the wrong food, you can get a sore throat right away. I really do believe that. I've observed it. I've observed it. That's why I believe it. I've seen it, happen. And I know it to be true. That's why I'm saying it. But that's what I think caused it, was the goat's milk. Well, I'm almost down to my... The goat's milk is almost gone now anyway. I could just pour out the rest of it, or just... Even if I drank the rest of it, I wouldn't get sick from it, because it's such a small amount that's left. But when I take the vitamin C, if I take... I'll probably only need about 4 grams or something of vitamin C, and that'll wipe out the infection, probably, I think. So I think I'll be okay. I already feel a little better, honestly, from taking 2 grams. Let me write down the second gram. The time is 16:15. I need to write down the second gram. That is about 30 minutes after the first gram. Good. Taking my second gram just now. So let's make our... window bigger. What have we got? We finished our study already. So what are we going to do now? There's always more to study, but let me just find out what we're... Let me set my limit on... Here we go. I'm trying to get my window sized here. I need to size this window. There we are. Okay, good. Put it up, down, about there. Transition. There we are. And drag this back in place. Better? Okay. Okay, so we've been learning a lot about what the Bible talks about, the ideas, the principles in the Bible, one of which is not to worship idols. Jehovah advises us it's not a good idea. And the reason, one great reason, is because they don't have any power. Why should we waste our time and our energy in worshiping them and in building these physical idols, these structures of men's hands and craftsmanship that are just made to resemble creatures of the earth. Maybe some of them resemble animals in the physical jungle. I mean, on land. Like lions, or they could be made, images of other powerful animals that people worship. And in some cases, they made images of things that were from the ocean, some kind of fish, or the image of a fish was put up on a pole. I mean, there were different things that they could and did that they did use as idols, the images of which they used as idols, that is, in ancient times, as well as perhaps even nowadays, we see idolatry in the form of worshiping the image of other people. People worship lifestyles. They worship a lifestyle, or they worship the idea of a personality that they see, you know, in another person who is perhaps a famous person or rock star or somebody. It wouldn't have to be someone famous, but somebody who's becomes an object of worship for that person, because we all have a need to worship. We're not judging people for wanting to worship or needing to worship. We all need to worship. So that's one of our real needs. It's not just a tendency that we have. It's a need to worship. So we need to worship the right person and the right thing in the right way, which is the person is Jehovah, whom we should be worshiping. It's Jehovah. He's almighty. He has the power to do anything and everything at any time. He is almighty, which means he can do miracles. He can do anything at any time. That's how powerful he is. And he created all things, which proves he can do anything at any time, because he created all things. He's a rock. He's my rock, David says, but he's our rock, our salvation, our secure height in Psalm 62. So, you know, David talks about those who take pleasure in a lie. Well, weren't these idol gods said to be lies also? Seems to me they were. They didn't even have a mouth to do blessing. They weren't able to bless even. They were even more of a lie than the people who do, than some people, whoever they are, who do blessing, but are actually calling down evil in their hearts at the same time. So when we looked at Isaiah, let me think. What chapter was that in Isaiah? I think we can maybe remember that. Right. Oh, yes, right. I think if we look in, if we look up billhook, he carves with a billhook. I remember there's something to do with that. Oh no, we haven't even come to it yet. Right. We're coming up to it, but I have a feeling. Well, I know we've already studied some chapters that talked about this same thing, the idolatry, the building of idols. Well, 38, that was about Hezekiah. That's right. And then 39, Merodach-Baladan. 40. Who has measured the waters in the mere hollow of his hand? The nations are as a drop from a bucket. They're as nothing compared to Jehovah. And in Isaiah 36, one of those nations was coming up to Jerusalem to attempt to overthrow it. Isaiah 35. Okay, so okay, let's look up Totter. Totter. Let's look up Totter. Forty-one. Yeah, in 40 and 41 of Isaiah, he chooses, he searches out, well, first of all, he also searches out a skilled craftsman. He searches out for himself, right? But the craftsman has cast a mere molten image. See, these people in verse 18, to whom can you people liken God? They're likening God to some carving. A mere molten image in verse 19. Overlaying it with gold and a tree that's not rotten in verse 20, he selects, right? And a skillful craftsman, he searches out. And here the idea in verse 20 of Isaiah 40 and 22, the idea of the circle of the earth, proving that in the Bible it's known that the earth is round because it's called the circle of the earth. This proves that the idea of a flat earth did not come from the Bible. Jehovah dwells above the circle of the earth. That's the one example that's commonly used, that can be used, I should say, for showing that the Bible is scientific. And also, he hangs the earth upon nothing is another one. That's another scripture. Okay. Hanging the earth upon nothing. Job 26 and 7. He is stretching out the north over the empty place, hanging the earth upon nothing. That's another one showing that the Bible is in harmony with the idea that the earth hangs in space. It doesn't exist in some way that's inconsistent with science. It's the Bible presents the earth consistent with the way that science also does, that the earth is hanging on nothing in space. It's not just floating, of course. We know that the earth is in orbit according to other astronomical theory, but the idea of it being hung in space is consistent with scriptures, entirely consistent with the Bible, just like the idea of the circle of the earth also. It's a circular object hanging in space, in other words, a spherical object in three dimensions, which is a circle in two dimensions. The Bible is consistent with science in both of those ways, and that we learn partly from Isaiah and partly from Job. But it's part of Isaiah, certainly, 40 and 22 being the verse there. He gives us power, right? Those hoping in Jehovah will regain power. Isaiah 40 and 31. One of the most beautiful passages of Scripture, the most encouraging or powerful passages. They will mount up with wings like eagles. That's amazing. I mean, it's inspiring with its power to just picture the thought, picture the image of mounting up with wings like eagles. We don't have to carve an image of it. That would be idolatry. But we can certainly use it as an image in our minds. That we can do. That's allowed. That's permitted. Not the making of an image. By carving it, that's not allowed by Jehovah. Or it wasn't under the Old Testament. And we understand that because the Old Testament is written on our hearts. Not that we're bound by it, but it's written on our hearts. A skillful craftsman, he searches out for himself to prepare a carved image, which is not the way in the day of Isaiah. That was not legal. It wasn't legal. It was against the law of Moses in Exodus that we just read. The book of Exodus was part of the five books, was one of the five books of the Torah, which was the law of Moses, which was, it consisted of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the five books of the Torah, which was the law of Moses. That was in Isaiah 40. In Isaiah 41, it said, one of them, fastened it with nails after making this thing, an image out of metal, to be an idol, with the intent of making an idol. They fastened it with nails, or one of them did, and they wanted it to be permanently there as an image to worship. So, let's look up the word idol. Idol. Isaiah, it's coming up in Isaiah later on, the word idol. Let's look up the word gods, plural, that might be. Well, for example, no gods, what are no gods? Isaiah chapter 21, all the graven images of her gods he has broken to the earth, referring to Babylon. Babylon has fallen. That referred to the city of Babylon in ancient times had fallen, or was prophesied by Isaiah that she was to fall. It was prophesied that she would fall. But that was the city of Babylon that fell after a couple hundred years later. Almost, just approximately 200 years later, when Babylon fell to the Medes and Persians, but it also was prophetic about the false empire, the world empire of false religion, known as Babylon the Great. That was a prophecy about her as well. The world empire of false religion. And the way that she prostitutes herself to the leaders of the world. And all of the things that the false religion organizations have done, that the organizations of false religion have done, as the same way that a prostitute does, by seducing and influencing. And I've got to turn off my soup. Turn off the soup. It's just been simmering. I've been simmering. So now I'd say my sore throat's gone. I've beaten the infection with 2 grams in this case, because it was a very initial early phase of sore throat. And I could feel it was coming on. I know there was an infection there. It's the kind of sore throat that when you swallow, it doesn't go away. you know, when you swallow, you know you're coming down with an infection. But now I know that it's going away, and if it doesn't, I'll take another one. But it's, you know, another 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram. But I believe I've beaten it already. So it usually takes very little if you catch it early. But sometimes it could take 6 grams or 4 grams or sometimes 12, like it did the other day, just recently. The last infection I had prior to this was 12 grams. And the one before that was 78 grams, which was the worst infection I've ever had, even though I only had very minor symptoms, because I thought I caught it early. But the thing was, I think it was the food poisoning that had infected my whole body, and that's why it took 78 grams. But there's no way that I could have eaten that much vitamin C at all. I mean, you know, as Dr. Cathcart said in one of the, in the talk that we just, that I presented in my video very recently, the one that began, my video that began with Dr. Cathcart. That was him talking about Incline Village. It wasn't that one. It was the one, the video that I made recently where he talks about bowel tolerance. And he was saying it can be as high as 15 grams when you're healthy for some people. But it's somewhere between, I think he said 9 or 10 and 15. I forget what he said. But bowel tolerance for me the other day when I was slightly ill was 12. I wasn't ill. I never got any illness other than the slight sore throat. These are the only symptoms that I seem to get ever since I've known about vitamin C. Because once I get a sore throat, I'll treat it right away. I don't ever... Well, no, that's not true. It's not true in the case of the strep throat I had when I took 26 grams sometime last year, I believe it was. I believe it was, but it was months ago, many months ago. I had strep throat and I took 26 grams and I came down with more severe symptoms because I didn't respond quickly enough. I didn't take it soon enough. I didn't react and take the vitamin C soon enough. Now I've got a slight feeling in my stomach. It's not nausea, it's some kind of like tiny bit of pain, but I don't know what it is. Could be heartburn or the effect of taking vitamin C, possibly, but you know, could be a slight bit of indigestion from what I ate. We'll see how long it lasts, but you know, the standard treatment for something in the stomach that's not right is a tiny bit of milk to see whether that makes it better. If it's, you know, overactive stomach acid or acid indigestion, then Tums works, which is sort of similar, but it's basically taking calcium in a way, so you could take even any amount of milk probably would do the same thing. But you have to be careful with milk. I found out when I tried taking milk after I'd had a very big amount of vitamin C. I'd taken a large amount of vitamin C. I think I had more than 18 grams already that day. But then I started taking more and I started getting a feeling that I'd taken enough vitamin C and I wanted to take some milk to try to neutralize. But that was a mistake because it caused an incredible amount of gas. It caused gas in my stomach, and the gas had no way to get out. It didn't come out immediately anyway, so it was just amazing. Eventually, it came out, I believe, of both. I burped it out, and it also came out in the other direction, too, eventually. But it was so painful when you have gas that you cannot get out of your system. It can be very painful, and I don't think it was anything more than gas, but it was something to be careful of if you're thinking of taking anything with vitamin C. Can cause gas sometimes, maybe. It's something to be aware of. So it's better to take the vitamin C by itself until you've beaten the virus, if you can, and then you can eat as much as you want. once you're better again, you know, once you've got the vitamin C sort of neutralized, once your body's neutralized, all the vitamin C is basically gone, or it's, you know, once your body's no longer in a state where it has a lot of vitamin C present, then it's safer to eat. But anyway, there's lots of things to learn. I learned something that day, but I'm not really sure what I learned. It's just that I know I didn't have acid indigestion because I tried taking Tums and it didn't do anything. Tums always works if it's acid indigestion, but I didn't have the burning in my chest that acid indigestion used to indicate when I used to have that years ago. I've never had that since I started eating a lot of dairy products. I never get acid indigestion because it's always neutralized by the dairy. So just don't have that acid indigestion. And I couldn't take dairy years ago because it made me constipated. And that's because I wasn't taking magnesium with it. You need to take magnesium with it. And all these other vitamins help. The vitamin K2 is absolutely vital. I'm taking B12. I take vitamin D, of course, with the K2. If I'm taking the one form of K2, with both forms of K2, actually. But I take collagen. Sometimes I take coral calcium as a supplement. Sometimes I'm taking multiple forms of magnesium. Oxide, citrate, and bisglycinate are all forms of magnesium that I use. Magnesium bisglycinate, magnesium citrate, magnesium oxide. They're all forms that I use in different amounts, but a very small amount of oxide and a very small amount of chelate also, magnesium chelate. I take a small amount of that with the oxide, and then I take a small amount of bisglycinate, and then if I need more, I take the citrate. But basically, by a small amount, I mean something like 200 milligrams. In the case of bisglycinate, they're 200 milligrams per capsule, caplet. It's a capsule. And the citrate is 150 milligrams. It's a capsule. The oxide is a caplet. It's sort of solid. Caplet. 250 milligrams, but magnesium oxide doesn't dissolve very easily, so it doesn't. It's not a very fast acting or it's not very potent. This is the capsules, the chelate. 125 milligrams chelate. I like natural factors when I can get it, but I mean I'll buy NACA. This was NACA, made by NACA. I like that brand as well. I don't know, but I'm taking collagen too, bovine collagen right now, but I don't take it every single day, but I've been taking it fairly regularly, and I take krill oil. I should take it more often, but right now I'm not going to take everything while I'm starting a new vitamin, which is the MK4. I want to find out about the MK4 by itself a little bit more. I'll take magnesium, but I'm not going to take a lot of. I took the B12 this morning. I'm not trying to get every other vitamin necessarily until I'm confident that the MK4 is working well, or that it's not doing anything harmful. Then I will start introducing all the other vitamins again, which I don't take every single day for most of them, probably, but I try to take them every day as much as I can. But I don't take as much as is recommended of the krill. I take much less than what's recommended of the krill oil. I'm just taking a little bit of it, one per day, which is one gel cap, which I think they recommend, maybe they recommend two twice a day or three a day or something. I'm not sure. Something like that. It doesn't really matter to me because I use my own judgment to decide. You know, I base it on my own experience, and krill is very expensive too. I'm not going to use something that's very expensive and, you know, unless I know that I need it, I mean, I'm not going to waste money on these sorts of things. And if I need it, yes, money's not an object then. So, Babylon has fallen. Remember, the graven images of her gods, that was something Jehovah didn't like. But the prostitute of false religion, who makes alliances with political leaders and things like that. You know, and then we have organizations like the United Nations, for example. Which are formed in order to attempt to bring about peace on Earth, but they don't have Jehovah's approval because they don't make any mention of Jehovah. They don't call upon Jehovah to bring peace upon the Earth. They're relying on their own ideas. What was I looking at there? Okay. 34. No. That's Exodus 34. Okay, so no gods. What are no gods? I think we had that expression. In Jeremiah 2:11. Has a nation exchanged gods? Exchange gods even for those that are no gods? You see? Yes. There is a nation that has exchanged gods even for those that are no gods. Jehovah's people exchanged his glory for idol gods and things like that. They worshipped false gods instead of worshipping Jehovah. That was certainly one of the reasons why he brought judgment against them. In fact, that's the reason, because when you worship the true God, you don't do the same things that you do when you worship false gods, idol gods. When you worship idol gods, you do all sorts of wrong things. Your conduct becomes unbefitting of Jehovah's people, because you're not worshiping the true God. If we go back, let's look at Isaiah 29, for example. Right. They were asleep in verse 10 of 29. Jehovah had poured a spirit of deep sleep out upon them. Closed their eyes, so they were like blind, as we just read in today's study. His people were blind. He was closing their eyes and blinding or covering the heads of his visionaries. The visionaries, they could not read it. They couldn't read Jehovah's law and understand, or they couldn't read Jehovah's word and understand what it meant, because it was sealed up in verse 11. The visionaries could not understand God's word, and therefore they would say, you know, no, I can't do it. But then the book would be given to somebody who couldn't even read, and they were asked to read it. And he would just say, I can't read anyway, so there's no point giving it to me. But the whole point was, Jehovah's people they had become blind. and speechless also. But they'd removed their heart far away from him in verse 13. That was why. They just taught the commandment of men. They taught the commandment of men. Right? That was the problem. They weren't teaching Jehovah's commandments. They didn't want to know that, but they couldn't understand it anyway. They didn't want to know it, so they couldn't understand it. But because they didn't want to know it, Jehovah had poured out a spirit of deep sleep upon them. He poured this upon them, the spirit of deep sleep, in verse 10. It was like they were drunk, but it wasn't with intoxicating liquor. It was this spirit that Jehovah poured upon them that caused them to be blind and stupid and without understanding, unknowing, you know, unseeing, unvisioning. They weren't able to see spiritual things anymore. You know, they couldn't see and understand what would motivate them to do good things. See that? And so Jehovah caused them to be blind. Let's go back. Right. But they did literally drink intoxicating liquor too. They were doing that as well in chapter 28, verse 7. And 8, they were becoming completely drunk to the point of vomiting everywhere. It was all over the tables. It was so everywhere. There was no place without vomit. So that's how bad it was. They had become greatly far away from Jehovah. They'd become greatly far out of the way of Jehovah, out of, far away from understanding or faith, far away from the true understanding, but also far away from any kind of faith in Jehovah. So, right. Okay. No, okay. Really? Okay. Okay, I didn't think that. Okay. Okay. No, okay. Well, in Numbers 33 and 52, you must destroy all their stone figures and all their images of molten metal. That was what the people of the land of Canaan were doing when the Israelites came to the promised land. They had to destroy these things because that was the things that was what that was, those were the wrong things, that those were among the wrong things that those nations were doing, were the false, the acts of false worship of these false gods. And they were commanded by Jehovah to destroy those false gods in the form of those images. So it's not like that was the first time they ever heard of it, that they weren't, or that they didn't know they weren't supposed to do it, but they were doing it anyway, even though they were not supposed to do it, and they'd known it for a long time. They'd known it ever since they'd come to the promised land in 1452, I should say, probably is more accurate. 1452, when they came to cross the Jordan, and when Moses finally passed on, and at the age of 120 he died and passed on the command to Joshua also, to lead the people of Israel across the Jordan and into the promised land in 1452 BCE. So see, if I look up metal worker, we're going to be able to learn how to search better at some point too. The metal worker, the craftsman. The craftsman has cast a mere molten image, a mere molten image, right? Which, verse 18, right? I don't think we'd seen this one yet. Yes, we had. We saw the verse 20, a certain tree as a contribution. That's right. So, right. The mere molten image. 40 and 19. And 41 and 7. Well, it's going to be something that we will be continually looking for and aware of. What about craftsman? What about hammering? Forge? Hammer. It's amazing how quickly a sore throat can go away when you take vitamin C. It's really amazing how fast it goes away. Let's look up forge. Forge. Same verse. Metal? Really? Those are the only times the word metal occurs in the Bible? That is curious. I can search my other insight. Bible, insight. Let me just bring this out of my way. There we go. Okay. Let's see. Craftsman. Okay, we have 44. We haven't got there yet, though, so that's not one. Okay, craftsman singular. Right, we just read 40 and 19 and 20, and 41 and 7, so those are the places where the word craftsman occurs. What about the word metal? 7 times. So it's more than the times indicated there, according to this. No, okay, there are 5, according to this, I think. 5. Number 60 and 38. Right? Number 33:52, that's mentioned. Deuteronomy 27 and 15. Oh, it's wooden metal worker, so it's a hyphenated word. That's why. So, and Jeremiah 6 and 27. And 1 Corinthians 13 and 12. So they're the same. Same references. What about the word idol? It doesn't occur yet in Isaiah. We haven't come to it yet in the book of Isaiah. But we know it's talking about these idol gods, about which Jehovah does not approve. So I think we can almost terminate. Can we? Our study's over? We've gone way over the time that I thought we'd take it. So we can stop here. But, I mean, yeah, the idea of true worship means worshiping Jehovah and not building these other gods, which inevitably do end up being created by people because humans have a need to worship that's part of us. And so if we're not worshiping the true God, we will worship these false gods, and we will create these gods for ourselves. That's what people do. So this was Ward Green. So we want to be worshiping the true God. This is Ward Green. It's December 2nd, 2022. 1659 hours, 1700 hours right now, 1700 hours. Bye for now. I care about you. I'm thinking about you. I hope you have a great day. Thanks for listening. Sorry I went so long today without realizing. I'm way over time without realizing it. But that's, maybe it's a good sign, because I must have been enjoying myself so much today I didn't even notice the time was passing. So be that as it may, I love you very much. Have a great day. I'll see you again soon, I hope. And be very grateful. Praise God. Bless you. God bless you, little children. And bye for now.